Buddy, this is a little bit of a bootleg intro, but I missed it last night. I can't do it again. It's been a little bit of a transition getting into the YouTube swing, so I've fucked this up twice now. But in either case, I want to thank everybody that's been supporting the show. So I'm going to read off my boss's names right now: Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, who was on the actual show tonight. She held up well. She did well. Thank you for coming by, Nikki. And she gave the studio a great gift, too. So there's that. And then, of course, you have Andrew Dame, Laura Veras, Matt Smith, Sean Collins, The Walking Cocktail, and Christian Peppers of the Amatory Murder. We just watched their new video and new for their new single right now. Fantastic. Check it out. The Amatory Murder. If you close your eyes, it's like you're listening to Motley Crue at times. It's amazing. Those guys, they really know how to capture you. They hook you right in. Fondle you. Unsatisfied. Max Anacapirato. Mad Mints, Jackie Milam, Jenny Lee, Stephanie Klinaki of StephanieKBeauty.com. Check that out. She's a wizard. She's a complete wizard. And then, of course, Matt DeFabio, the founder of the 1984 sponsorship, and his right-hand man, Brad, My Brain on Me on Tumblr. Thank you guys so much for supporting this, and I hope you enjoy the second episode of this YouTube live stream. This is a real, real big change. I'll try to put this into words some other time, but juggling a lot right now, and there's going to be a lot more change, but thank you guys for sticking with it. So I think this is a growing experience. Take care. Got to stop this now. Phone locked on me. Listening to all this shit.
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Everybody, I'll tell you, there's nothing, it never ceases to, it always hits the spot when we go live, or right before we go live, and I play the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner by the Kentucky State Choir. Every damn time, it tickles me pink. All right, I'm live on Periscope tonight. I'm going to start doing that more often, changing up the camera angles a little bit. I got that going on, I got this going on, I got that going on. Got this going on. I feel like Steve Brule over here. But I'm also starting to realize how much work I have to do to get this change up to date. Gotta figure out a new disclaimer for beforehand. The ZenLive.tv stuff. The other thing is, I was really thinking about not going live from YouTube tonight. Because, everybody was talking about how cozy the other place was. Because it was less, bright colors, a little bit more dark. So I was thinking about not going live tonight and just taking the long weekend. But I was starting to think afterwards. I said, maybe I can get something figured out by Monday. We can get some kind of a placeholder, something like that. I don't know. Elsewhere. In either case, this is going to be embedded somewhere. Also joining us in the room on the other side of the room, but also in the chat room, there's Nikki Solis. There she is on camera. Oh, she's just chilling. She came on in and she just took the place over. So there you go. She's here in the studio. That's what happens when you take the time to go travel and meet friends. And you know, you're hanging out in the broadcast studio, and we're just doing our thing. Last night's show was actually a lot better than I thought. I got off saying, ugh, God, I need my music back, and I still do. Something's got to give with YouTube, and I hold out hope that one day we'll be able to bring on something that's a little bit more me. As you can hear in the background right now, I'm trying to find the best of royalty-free music, but it's just not working for me. Also, we're tracking this Hurricane Matthew as it's coming in. We got a lot of things to talk about tonight. Amongst other things, clowns. This clown shit keeps going on. There's an exorcism going on in Spain that I want to read about. That sounds really fun. And then, of course, more on the Miss Universe thing, even though we didn't do much because it's a stupid story, the dumbest story ever, and so much robot news. You want to talk about more transhumanist news? Holy shit, this is going to a new level. Also, the Skype is on. It's the same Skype, Zen Live TV, and you call on in, and we can get some conversations going on whatever the hell it is. New updates ready to install on Skype. No. Mike, you said that's a bad move? Nothing happens? Okay. So I'm just going to minimize this. It is on, though. First thing I want to get around to is Hurricane Matthew. Now, over 100 people have already been killed in Haiti, it's reported. But there's one thing I want to start off with. Now, this is an older video, couple of years old, and it was done by Alex Jones. Now, ignore all the craziness that we know comes with that package. And just really think about this. This is a man named Ben Livingston. Some call him the father of weaponized weather, okay, and weather modification. It's part of some of the first real efforts to modify weather and seed clouds in the 1960s, the early 1960s. And, of course, it has been documented and spoken about that cloud seeding and weather manipulation was actually weaponized and used for the first time in Vietnam to kind of drown out enemy positions where any other kind of military penetration could not occur. So it's a nine-minute video, but I just want to play maybe about 2 or 3 minutes of it just to take this in and then zoom out a little bit and think about what we are dealing with on a year-in, year-out basis with hurricane season, even though the hurricanes have really been pretty mild in the last couple of years. I heard that this is the first major hurricane or anything kind of touchdown in Florida since 2005 or so. Of course, you know, we were supposed to have super hurricanes and ridiculous weather getting worse and worse every year with all the climate change going on. You know, hurricanes full of polar bears running around in Florida, trying to find new places to hang out, and just things aren't really happening the way all the climate crazies are talking about. We're going to get around to that too. We're going to get around to that too because it's already been claimed by some that if we had just done a climate deal, signed a climate deal already, Hurricane Matthew would have never happened. So let's listen to this just for a little bit. Okay, something to keep in the back of your mind whenever you see these huge storm systems rolling in, and then think about the experiments that were done in the 1960s. All right, let's see if this is a good spot to start. Hold on.
So I got in the Navy.
All right, I'm going to mute my microphone so you can hear this better. Hold on.
I never could understand why the clouds wasn't bigger, had a little more shade, and was chopping that cotton.
Hold on, ready?
So I got in the Navy. I managed to get into meteorology school, and I think that's really where I learned the most of my physics. They sent me to the Hurricane Hunter Squadron in Jacksonville, Florida. That squadron, of course, had just become involved in Project Storm Fury. We were doing quite a lot of testing work out over the test range at China Lake, California, where we dropped cloud seeding flares, our silver iodide generators, into clouds or just where we wanted to see what the reaction was. And it was there when I learned for sure that you could really change a cloud by the amount of silver iodide you put in and where you put it.
He's really saying silver iodine.
Fly into hurricanes for the purpose of modifying them, if you will. That was Project Storm Fury. I began to be extremely confident that we could do whatever we about what we wanted to with a hurricane. The Project Storm Fury had been going on since 1961, and they had already done or had done two experiments, one in 61 and 63. Well, by 1964, when I was there in 1964, I wrote the plan and started to have them track and a mission for every flight that was on the hurricane cloud seeding experiments. So we had documentation for everything. Operation and Project Storm Fury are very positive. His report said that we claim they should consider now if a hurricane heads straight towards Miami. By 1969, we had all the latest state-of-the-art equipment in a number of airplanes, and we also had aircraft equipped with dispensing equipment to put silver iodide into a hurricane. If you seed enough clouds in the right front quadrant of a hurricane where the energy cells are, you may build a second eye, or at the minimum make this original eye much bigger, which meant you have a reduction in wind velocity. On August 18th in 1969, Hurricane Debbie was seeded five times at two-hour intervals, and the maximum wind speeds decreased from 115 to 80 miles per hour. That's a pretty remarkable reduction of more than 45% in damage reduction potential. The storm was left alone on the 19th, and on the 20th went back and seeded that cloud a second time and decreased the winds again to just under 100 miles per hour.
So thinking about this just for a second, I know it might be the first time some of you have heard any of that testimony and that interview, but it's a really, really, really interesting one. It goes on for at least 40 minutes. You should really check it out. It was a well-done interview. And it makes you think, you know, where are we right now as far as this technology? If we were able to land on the moon in 1969, and we've been seeding clouds since the early 60s, and we even were able to manipulate weather in a tactical sense in the late 60s when we're fighting war in Vietnam, then the question I would pose to you guys in the chat room, and please call in or write in, what do you think the purpose of not using any of that technology in situations like this is? Maybe you have some kind of technical insight on this. Give me a call. Do you know why? Do you have any scientific insight on this? Why it wouldn't be done? Have we found out something about silver iodide that is it adverse to has adverse effects in the environment? I don't know. All I know is that from testimony like that and all of the literature that has been written to support that type of narrative, like what was it? Was it recently somebody said in recent years that weather manipulation was used? Weather manipulation techniques was used to make sure that certain types of sporting events or anything like that went off without a hitch out in Russia. I forget about that. We had spoken about that maybe a couple of years ago on a show. So if you guys have anything on that, also call in. But I just wanted to start off with that because I thought it'd be, you know, some interesting food for thought as we watch how Hurricane Matthew kind of rips its way along the East Coast, because that's happening now. So, that being said, let's see what's going on in the chat room. Now, I popped the chat room out so I'd be able to see everybody. View active users. Oh, see, it doesn't even let me look at all the viewers. It just says active users in the last 5 minutes, which is Nikki and Johnny Kimball. What's going on, Johnny? Johnny Broom in the chat room. And Nikki Solis, who's sitting right there. Solis. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Speak right into that microphone. Yeah, pull it close. Try again.
Solis.
There you go.
There you go.
How are you enjoying yourself so far?
Yeah, once I got here and I saw the doors, I said, good, I'm in the right place, and it's worth all the hassle.
It was.
It really wasn't that hard to find. It was probably just me, nerves at the end.
Well, hey, it's
not that bad at all.
It's not bad at all.
I'm not saying everybody needs to come by here and visit, but...
Yeah, no, we don't need anybody. We don't need everybody or anybody just to come by here and visit. Just, put your time in, and then one day the invite will come. Don't worry about it.
If you happen to be in the area.
Yeah. Wait, we can't put links in the chat room?
No.
Is there any way to moderate this? Oh, wait, I can add moderators. Let me try...
Matt's in the chat room, and Jenny Lee also, if... I can't. It won't show me who's in the chat room.
Hold on a second. I'm going to try to make somebody a... Johnny, let me know if that made you a moderator.
He'll do it.
Oh, no. It didn't do anything. Maybe I have to put at. Nope, that didn't work either. I'm going to have to figure this out. I'm going to really have to figure this out. I don't know. What's going on, Stacy? What's going on, iLock? Who's iLock? Is that Nikki? Who can you tell me?
No idea. Unless it's somebody who just showed up yesterday when I was here.
Somebody new?
Yeah, new to me.
Good to have you on, iLock. And let's see here. No, you can't say...
I've got swearing on my screen.
I got swearing. I just saw Jenny Lee say fuckers. That's good.
I just dropped an F-bomb.
Please. Swear. I don't want any censorship
that
here.
That's the whole point.
That'd be terrible. Terrible if our mouths were taken away from us.
No kids allowed.
Yeah, we can't have things like this happen. Not here, at least.
No.
So let's move on to the next thing.
Oh, Anarchy in Black just showed up.
Awesome. Here's the next thing I wanted to get on to. Knife-wielding clown menaces subway riders and chases teens out of station in New York. Now, first of all,
say hanging out of car windows.
Let's just watch this, actually. That would be even better. Because, it's just like, this is New York, and in any stretch of the imagination, but now the people are just wearing masks. So I guess it adds a little bit more excitement to the mix. Let's see how this goes.
Terrorize another driver by wearing these clown masks. It's one of several incidents involving masks like this one that have popped up in our area.
Concern is, that it seems like every time I hear or read somewhere that it's coming closer and closer.
Concern is growing as quickly as the
Pennywise.
Amount of sightings
Mr.
and
Bob
threats
Gray.
Are spreading.
People have been saying, on Twitter, it's like they chase you, like stuff like that. Like, they don't actually, they might not hurt you, but like.
Hold on, let's go back. Everybody, count the likes. Count the likes, everybody.
Sightings and threats are spreading.
People have been saying, on.
One.
Like Twitter.
Two.
It's like they
three.
Chase you, like stuff like.
Four.
That, like, they don't actually.
Five, six.
They might not hurt you, but like.
Seven.
The fact that, like, they could, like, chase.
Eight.
You and, like, it's just.
Nine.
Like, really creepy.
Just hours ago in Lake.
Nine likes
Island,
in 10 seconds. Holy shit, that must be exhausting.
When a menacing clown approached her from behind, wearing a white mask, red wig, and holding a kitchen knife. In Fairlawn, New Jersey, two people were arrested after spooking a driver. They were wearing these masks.
They're both hanging out the front of the window, and, from speaking with the victim, she just kind of said, they just kind of were, like, throwing their hands as if to say, like, hey, boo.
Take a look. The Fairlawn arrests among several incidents in just the last 2 days. In Toms River, a 12-year-old and 14-year-old girl were arrested for making separate clown hoaxes. In Yonkers, the Bronx, and Poughkeepsie, police have discovered threats on social media involving clowns and directed at schools.
So this is what's going on right now. Everybody, there's all types of clowns running around trying to scare people. And
Democrats.
Yeah, Matt says they're called Democrats. And they've got their knives, and they're scaring the shit out of people. Now, this I haven't really talked about it a lot because I just think it's funny. And the other thing is, why do they give the attention to him now? See, the only reason why people are paying attention to this right now is because it's getting so much attention. I mean, this is the reason why you don't show people who are streaking across center field at Yankee Stadium, so that it doesn't encourage other people to do it. But of course, because it's so unusual and it's something, if it bleeds, it leads, and if it makes people cry, then we're going to go for it on the news, and that's just it. The dog walkers at the in the news are just leading us along and giving us our treats on some days, giving us some scares on the others. And it's all in good fun. So the Skype is on. We talked about Ben Livingston and the cloud seeding that used to go on, that were first started to go on in the 1960s and all throughout the 60s. And why aren't we using cloud seeding technology and weather alteration technology to at least limit and downgrade these devastating hurricanes to try to save lives? If you watch the full episode of that interview with Ben Livingston, you'll see at one point, I think it was done after Hurricane Katrina, I think he makes comments about something like when he sees really devastating storm systems roll in and take huge tolls on people's lives and property and infrastructure and all that. It's very, very disconcerting knowing that we have the technology and we have used the technology in the past to either build up or diminish storm systems, you know. So if it's been weaponized before, we definitely know how to cut it in half. So that's one other thing, God damn it. Creepy dark space piano music. That's what I'm listening to right now, not Dean Martin. Creepy dark piano music. I don't want to listen to royalty-free music anymore. This is pissing me the fuck off. We don't have any music that I can talk over. Just doesn't happen like that. Gadget Doc is with us. I can't see anybody else. Stacy and Perry are there. Okay. Well, I have to imagine that when Stacy shows up, Perry is in tow. So they're probably taking bong rips together. That's fantastic. That's it. Skype is on. Let's move on to something else now. Blood-curdling screams. Okay, let me get the creepy music up a little bit more now. That's exactly what I needed. Let's start from the beginning. Okay, ready?
That's what you're going to hear from my house if Hillary Clinton wins.
You know what? I really do think it doesn't really matter. I don't think it really matters. We need to go through a collapse. It's the only thing. We talked about this on the show months ago about, you know, who's sheltering us from feeling the pain of these natural cycles that we go through over here in anywhere. We should have collapsed a long time ago. We should have just, it would have been bad for a little bit, maybe for a long time. Who knows, but we have to go through it. But no, we're staving off. And I think that the real thing, the real dangerous thing to look at this election, a dangerous way to look at this election is in thinking that if one person or the other gets in, there's a way to turn this thing around. If there's no way to turn this thing around, there's going to be a collapse. There's going to be a major reset. In many ways, whatever the hell that means, bubbles are going to burst, programs are going to become insolvent, people are going to skip out on things. We have some Obamacare to talk about here tonight. Nobody who gets into office is going to turn this around. And if the only thing if you're looking for is a delay in execution, just get it over with. Why the hell do you want to sit on death row and put it off for a couple more years? Get it the fuck over with. You're going to sit there hand-wringing? You're going to wring your hands out for a couple years? Oh, maybe the governor will give me a stay. Just do it. Take my damn head off. So first, before we get to Obamacare, because this is about the same level of scary, blood-curdling screams alert police to an exorcism somewhere in the Spanish city of Oviedo.
Oviedo.
Okay, neighbors heard blood-curdling screams. Police say that they were called to a flat near Plaza de la Gesta at around daybreak last Saturday after a neighbor called in to report blood-curdling screams of a woman. Okay, which is pretty much how my weekends are. Week in, week out. Just blood-curdling, hopeless screams. Men and women. Sometimes myself. Lauren and I will lay in bed at night sometimes and we'll just scream together. Sometimes we'll hold each other while we scream. Other times we'll lay side by side and just wail. Just wail. we'll just wail together. Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, let's go on to this next thing. There's Mike. Look at Mike for a second. Here you go, Matt. Thank you. So, I heard a woman screaming. This is a quote. I heard a woman screaming, and it frightened me. One neighbor told media. The screams were blood-curdling, like she was being slowly murdered. Nothing better than a slow murder. The woman, who has not been named but is said to be of South American origin, had to be hospitalized after being found in a state of great mental anguish. She was discharged hours later after it was confirmed that she had suffered no physical injury. What do you know? The woman was reportedly undergoing an exorcism in the presence of several young people led by a shaman. Quote, it absolutely had nothing to do with the sanctioned Catholic exorcism. Benito Gallego, Dean of Oviedo Cathedral, told La Opinión, I guess a Spanish paper out there.
The fact, the opinion.
The opinion. It may be that it was some sort of cult ritual, faith healing, or voodoo. It sounded like a healing to me. But it's far removed from the exorcism practiced by the Catholic Church, which, of course, is completely intriguing to me.
Yeah, but also you got to remember that the top, what are they called? The people that take the demon out?
Exorcists?
The exorcizer?
Exorcist.
That's what they're called? The exorcist? The top exorcist died, right?
Yeah.
That's why.
You didn't.
If he was alive, this wouldn't have happened.
His name was Father Amorth. He was 91 years old. We covered that a couple weeks ago. Remember that? Yeah. He performed over 70,000 exorcisms. And ever since he died, the world has been going to shit. Do you understand what I'm telling you guys? It's over. My God. So that's the blood-curdling screams. Let's get that out of the way. We'll just knock this off. I see these things, I say, okay, this is for tonight. We're going back to the hurricanes now. This is from Newsbusters. NBC Ron Allen, okay, he thinks the climate deal is designed to stop, quote, designed to stop storms like Hurricane Matthew. So if you didn't have enough evidence already to realize that this entire this green movement, this climate, hysterical climate movement is just fascism. In the way that it's peddled, there's just absolutes. There's no gray, there's no debate, it's absolutes. It's either denier or believer, okay? It's very, very religious. It's fascism.
Yeah, it's a cult. And that's what is this? I didn't hear it, but I was, what did Leo DiCaprio say? If you're a climate denier, you aren't eligible.
Ineligible to what? To live?
No, what'd he say? He said, if you're a climate denier, you shouldn't be allowed to be, you know, a senator or whatever, public official. Which I thought was funny, because I guess apparently if you're a fucking criminal, it's fine, though.
Well, he's perfectly fine in his line of work, then, because he can believe in fairy tales, and he can act out fairy tales, and he can get paid for it because he's got a pretty face, and he's been doing it for a long time. And that's just pretty much it. So Leonardo DiCaprio and every fucking actor like him want to go out there and play the game. Just go, listen, we're listening to clowns and actors. Comedians and actors are laying down, people are running to them for political insight. Can you imagine that? While they jet around the world, while they yacht around the world. Can you imagine this shit?
I'd rather not have to.
Yeah, well, you better. It's happening. There's no way to getting around this one. You know what this weekend's going to be like? In a couple hours, Matt is sleeping over tonight. Mike is sleeping over tonight. So is it.
I'm sleeping.
You need to.
Directly.
You gotta go
next
to sleep.
To Francis.
What? I'm.
You didn't know about that?
When?
Me, Lauren, and Mike worked it all out. Lauren's gonna sleep in the living room on the couch. Mike's taking the floor, and I'm gonna be in the bed for my back.
Ask Lauren's got worse back problems than you do. Nah, she's sleeping with. I'm sleeping with my fiance tonight, Matt.
Then there's gonna be three people. I was about to say.
You guys spoke to. You go. Wait, hold on. Wait.
Are you gonna be at the foot of the bed?
There's gonna be a threesome in the bed then. Wait a second. So you're telling me that you guys spoke about this? You spoke about sleeping arrangements? Where?
I said, "You, Lauren, do you mind if I take your spot next to Frank? Because my back, it hurts really bad." She's like, "Yeah, that's no problem."
Should we call her? Should I give her a call?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't believe that Lauren would pass up the last night of sleeping with me.
Well, this actually is part of...
Oh, I see what's going
to
happen.
No, yeah, because okay, instead of waiting for you two to get married, this is my prima nocta.
I see. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah. It's my prima nocta, except I only do the boys.
So that I only do the boys? So you're I get it now. You're taking the groom. So Lauren is William Wallace.
I would never talk like about doing that with Lauren, bro.
So Lauren is William Wallace. I get it. Oh, well, I'm going to have to try to keep my honor.
That means Frank
has to die. I can't believe
you
actually thought I was saying...
I don't know. I thought it was a joke either way, so no, I was just rolling with it.
I wouldn't.
Okay, so okay, a lot better. Okay, joining us right now is...
I'm going to get raped a lot better.
That's really going to happen.
Yeah.
Hey,
listen, Frank.
Yes.
I hate to interrupt that absolutely riveting discussion about your sleeping arrangements.
It was terrible.
Like, I was deciding, should I call, should I not? No, I have to interrupt that before it happens.
No, please, thank you.
So, first thing I want to say is I'm laughing at the idea of this exorcism that was stopped that was apparently not in line with the Catholic Church's practices, because I'm now imagining a sort of exorcism bureaucracy, like you need a license and everything.
It's ridiculous. Like, I tell people all the time, I said, you know what? I said, we should really, I tell all my personal trainer friends, I said, we should start a personal training certificate program. There's no governing body for personal training and who
yes,
gets.
Sir. From what I understand.
Well, there's name recognition alone and prestige, like NASM, ACE, a couple of other big times. So,
yeah,
you can go to like the brand name, so people will recognize it and they'll be a little bit more like, oh, okay, that's official. You know, me, for the last couple of years, I stopped using NASM for a while. But in either case, yes, I know. That would be amazing, a tribunal over interfaith exorcisms.
But
yes,
I originally wanted. So I'm calling in actually in regard since you messaged me about it.
Yes.
About your talk yesterday about anarchists and libertarians and minarchists.
Yes.
And
I'm gonna put you on the screen right now on the phone. Anarchy in black. Okay, go ahead, man. Let's talk about this.
All right. So I mean, So a short version of it is that the reason anarchists argue so vehemently with libertarians is, if you're really cynical about it, it's because heretics are worse than heathens. But if you want to, like, the reason in my mind is because a lot of minarchists are, in my experience, very, very insufferable about the superiority of an idea that has already been tried. That is, you know how communists will like to say that, oh, true communism has never been tried. But, I mean, to all of us with common sense, we can look all throughout history, well, all throughout the past 100 years anyway, and point to all of these state socialist societies that collapse very violently and with very deadly consequences for the people who are living inside them. And we recognize when a communist says, oh, you know, it's good in, like, it hasn't really been tried right. It's good in theory. Mm. And we know that they're wrong.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Listening to, for an anarchist, listening to a minarchist libertarian describe how if we just try a small government, constitutional society again, that it will work well, when we know, like, we are living right now in the end result of a small government, minarchist, constitutional state. This is it. We had a constitution that limited the power of Congress to interstate commerce and general welfare. And right now, you can be compelled to buy health insurance because that is interstate commerce and taxation is within the power of the federal government.
Well,
is a constitutional power.
Let me ask you that. Would you be able, what would you say if I were to come at you in the from the angle of, wouldn't you say that the rise and fall of and the conquering and the losing of land and people being in one place and then years later it's not that country anymore, the redrawing of the map and this and that and countries that and governments that rise and fall and collapse and all that stuff, wouldn't you say that it's a little bit more, or could you say that it's a little bit more of a cycle of human interest and in what happens? Because I don't know that anything is wrong with the structure and the philosophy and the rules that are put in the Constitution or anything like that.
You can't just create a government with any characteristics you want and just hope that they stay forever. People are like, I mean, when you introduce human nature, which is a very funny thing for an anarchist to say, it's ironic. When you introduce human nature, the dynamics are always the same. The Constitution was being violated within years of its being written. As soon as there were laws against, as soon as you had the Alien Sedition Acts, which were eventually struck down, but already, as soon as people were unsatisfied with the Articles of Confederation and they couldn't find a way to tweak that to give themselves power, they wrote a new constitution that ostensibly limited their power. And as soon as that was signed, they were already thinking of ways to work around it. We see this. We saw this when George Washington put down a revolt against his excise tax on whiskey when he was violently putting down farmers in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. We already saw in the 1790s what the U.S. government was like. Mm. And this is no inherently evil quality about the United States government. You know me well enough to find out that I'm not the kind of person who just hates America just to hate America. But this is nothing that can be fixed by writing a better constitution. If you write a constitution that is so great that abuse of power is impractical, and in my opinion, the Articles of Confederation is one such document. I would say that if you look at the Articles of Confederation, the powers given to the government there were so small that it was pretty much impossible, well, incredibly difficult anyway, to abuse it to create the monster we have right now. But the Articles of Confederation didn't stick, and it was never going to stick, because all of the same founding fathers that made it, minus Thomas Jefferson, made a new constitution.
Now, what would you say about the standard of living that was created over the years in the United States compared to what the rest of the world is doing? I don't know.
I mean, the U.S. is a freer economy than most. I don't think the United States government is uniquely evil in any sense. The United States is a freer economy than, well, it was anyway for a long time, a freer economy than most countries that existed. So it stands to reason that in spite of whatever regulations existed, the U.S. would still have a higher standard of living than in other countries. Mm. Yeah. But the idea that a minarchist state will protect freedom is patently false. And, you know, I can bear any arguments about, you know, anarchy has never been tried, or, oh, you want anarchy, go to Somalia. But goddamn, like, we have seen minarchy. This is it. We're living it. And we can look in almost any other country in the Western world and see what it leads to.
It may not
lead to death camps. It may not lead to violent purges. It may not lead to mass starvation. But it still leads to destruction of our freedoms in ways that, you know what, are impossible for some of these other two-bit leaders in Africa or Latin America. It wouldn't even occur to like Idi Amin that he could assassinate his citizens with predator drones. That would never even... In his wildest dreams, I don't think he would think of flying robot assassins.
Well, if I'm thinking about United States history, and the closest thing that to a stateless society we've had here would be the Old West, and
the Old West as described in movies, or the Old West as it actually was.
As it actually was. There was a lot more. You're detached from everybody. You're forming. It's a lot more individual. You've explained the way that private security companies work and all that stuff. It seems like in many respects that's just what it was. Towns and everything took care of themselves, but they almost like banded together and formed little militias. But there was also a lot of gang stuff going on out there. And the other thing I want to, which I really think just embodies humanity in general, is their ability to form gangs. I mean, I don't think that the philosophy and the fairness within the Constitution has anything to do with just how human beings twisted it around. just because we have a tendency to form parties and factions, and we become self-interested, and we crown ourselves kings of some kind of reality or whatever. It happens. That happens too.
But it even goes beyond that, even beyond ideological differences you might have, even if we assumed a world where there were no ideologically minded leftists, if we assume that communism was never a thing and leftism was never philosophy, even then the dynamic would still exist. The politician would still have an interest in maintaining their power. The idea of pork barrel legislation, of diverting public funds to support your own reelection, of creating vast bureaucracies as essentially jobs programs. These incentives would still exist. We would still see them. The pattern would still emerge no matter what, as it did in America even before the Soviet Union was a thing. You already had vast expanses of government.
So then, in a nutshell, am I on the right track in saying in knowing how humanity is, and actually knowing how humanity is, the worst part is putting them in charge of something that could wield as much authoritarian power as possible.
As the state.
Right.
Like, the thing to do is to destroy it. You will never find the right people. Even if you put in the right person, they will want to be reelected. Yes, obviously, especially now. But even at any time. And that's why I say this idea of a minarchist, you know, small government state that lasts more than a generation is a fantasy. Even that lasts less than a generation, depending on how you view American history, is still a fantasy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist.
Well,
it never has, and it never will. Maybe save for some monarchies, but that's entirely different.
But you see, it did. Even if it lasted for a generation, it's usually because that generation came at the darkest point in the previous era. So pretty much when we were at our wits' end with English occupation and English overrule, we for at least a generation, had something as close to a perfect thing as far as individual freedom goes than we ever gotten. Now, even if that deteriorated within the
rapidly.
But let's just talk about a generation. You know, canceling out the Whiskey Rebellion for a second. Just within a generation, still, if we lived in a world like that today, I don't think people would be able to handle that freedom. And that's where the basis of – I totally see what you're saying. I totally see what you're saying, and I understand it, and it's all checks out. It always does. But in knowing
– let's continue first.
But in knowing what we – now, where the fuck did I go with that? Shit.
Sorry.
No, God damn it. How did that take me off?
You were saying – okay, in knowing how much the costs are, there's no way you could get people to – probably you're going to say something along the lines of, you could never get people to accept the cost of even small government now, so why would you get them to accept the cost of having no government? If you can't convince people to accept a reduction in their welfare now, there's no way you'll get them to accept a complete abolition of their welfare. Well, something along the lines of that?
I guess it was leading to that, but I know it was another point, but I guess we could just skip to that point. Maybe I'll remember it. But wouldn't you live like... Like a pig in shit if you were living with me in that once attained rule, you know? That's the only thing I'm thinking about. I understand where the real way of living freely goes, and I'm with you on that, and I would be able to live with you in that society. But I just...
You're not the kind of minarchist that anarchists like to shit on. Like, how often has it been an experience for you personally that you've had to, like, be in discourse with Tumblr anarchists?
Oh, no.
You're not like that, because you are an open-minded person. You're just not convinced by anarchy because you think that it cannot be achieved, and it's a waste of time to put your efforts towards something you think is impossible.
Hey, let me ask you, open
to hearing the idea, and that's a little bit different from the behavior pattern of minarchists, which is what you were saying about how much anarchists like to gang up on minarchists, because minarchists are not like that. Minarchists are like Leninists that try to push the lie that if we just get to this kind of society, well, then it's just a short step away. A minarchist that anarchists like to shit on is the equivalent of Vladimir Lenin saying, well, don't worry, we haven't divested power to the local Soviets yet, but we'll have this Politburo and we'll control all of Russia just like this. And at some point in the future, all of you ideologically minded leftists we'll be able to take over because we'll have gone through the practical parts and we'll get to this utopia. That, I mean, in my case, I don't believe that the anarcho-communist utopia exists at all. So whatever Lenin prevented, I mean, it wasn't really worth getting to. But it's still a lie because, as Minarchists say, oh, well, what if in you live in an anarchist society and I wanted to create a so-called peaceful voluntary state? And I ask these Minarchists, like, okay, so I already know that's not true, but tell me about your peaceful voluntary state. And they'll describe it to me. They'll say, okay, I live in an anarchist society, and I believe that my defensive needs are best done, are best handled collectively, which is true. Not everybody is good at violence. Collective self-defense is a very good thing. I mean, division of labor is an integral part of a capitalist economy.
I think I've asked you this question before, but I think I framed it in the way, because I've asked you a lot of questions as far as how certain things would play out in a stateless world. And I had said, what if, you know, the in a anarchist world, would you be able to form your own town and build a wall around that town? You know,
I mean, if you own it, sure. But here's the thing that is important is that when I ask minarchists that are not you, because you do not demonstrate this behavior pattern, I am not attacking you right now. Be aware of this.
Okay.
That I will ask them, okay, so tell me about this state. How does it work? And they say, well, I want to defend myself collectively because I think that is the most efficient way to do it. And I say, okay, how will you do it? Well, I'll get a bunch of guys, like, okay, and then we'll get a bunch of guns, all right, and then we'll go to a town and we'll ask them if they want to be defended. And if they say yes, then we'll protect them in that sense. And I say, okay, that sounds like you're a defense firm, you're a mercenary company. Mm-hmm. Did I lose connection just now?
No, we're good.
Oh, my phone. And I say, okay, and what if somebody in this town doesn't want to pay for your service? And they say, oh, no, well, they have to. Say, okay, see, then you're a warlord.
You're a mafia.
Like, no. If they don't like it, they can leave. You can't just let them free ride in your protection service. Like, okay, you see, in 15 minutes of conversation, your peaceful voluntary government is a raider gang. That's what you've described to me. You've described to me raiders. It's like, no, it's a republic because we came together voluntarily to form it. No, the people, you and your friends came together voluntarily to be in the raider gang, yes, but the people who you are charging for the service have not paid for it. Rather, do not want to pay for it. They are not voluntarily paying for the service. And that is why I see minarchist claims for wanting a peaceful voluntary state that we mean anarchists just won't let them have. It's disingenuous. They say, no, we just want this small state to violate the NAP and you guys are just being autistic. Rather, we want it to enforce the NAP and you guys are being autistic. Like, no, your peaceful voluntary state is violating the NAP on your behalf. And you say this very obviously.
See, and that's I've witnessed all that stuff go down. Now what do you think about this? I mean, it's an opinion question. Now I love talking about all this stuff, and I love following all those trains of thought down their respective paths, and it's cool to put everything together and see it all work out. And I know I would be able to handle myself in a society like that. Now, speaking to the fact that the rest of the world is, I just don't believe, prepared for that, I think that people like you are very, very rare. When you talk about the critical mass of, compared to the critical mass of people, there would be a major, major die off. People would die. A lot of people would die if they were left on their own right now.
I don't really believe that. I believe that if you are competent enough to understand the concept of paying for insurance, then you can handle like ruling yourself. If you can understand the idea of paying somebody repeatedly for in the event of a negative event that may not come, if you can wrap your head around that, then you already understand how your defense agency works. You already get that.
But a lot of those people don't have the means to pay anybody. The only reason why tens of millions of people in this country eat is because the government sends them tickets. You know, I'm talking about that kind of damage to the human animal. I say it's terrible what the welfare system has done because you're talking about...
Honestly, at a certain point, Frank, like, this is going to be really cruel, and this might not help my point at all, but at a certain point, that makes these people government programs. Like, if they only exist because they are subsidized by the state,
and
you truly believe that they could not live at all, that they could not think of any way, and this isn't me, again, disparaging your opinion of humanity... It's possible that, in fact, these creatures do exist. I don't even doubt it. But then at a certain point, this person is a government program. I mean, at a, like, then it just comes down to how much do we as a culture really care? Because
I think that the other thing that the welfare state has done is taken the care out of many. Now, I know that despite the high level of taxation in this country, we year in and year out are number one in the world in private charitable donations, like I think over $300 billion a year or something like that. And so I'm not so even with all this going on out there, and there are great people and we are very, very giving. And I just think that with the inflated welfare state that we have, you take away the will and you take away the ability for people to give more. And because
you take away the service of guilt assuagement twice, you pay to get to feel like your obligation to the poor is settled once, and you don't do it again. Without the welfare system, that guilt would come back, and would come back hard.
Yeah, but the fact that you don't have a choice also takes away all of the rewards, the emotional rewards, both people get. Because when you have one person giving their time, their money, groceries, or anything to another person in their town, taking care of your own, taking care of each other, then there's an emotional exchange there, too. There's bonds, there's morale, there's people that don't, you know, then even the recipient class, they don't want to overstay their welcome. They feel indebted to a person. They feel the gratitude. Maybe it makes them want to, you know, try some new ideas out. You know, so there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that are taken away from the welfare state, aside from people's, you know, will. It's an emotional attack on both the recipient and the giver.
Sure, I agree. I'm not really sure what that has to do with anarchy, but I agree with your point.
I don't know, because we were talking. We went from.
Oh, you said a lot of people would die without a government to take care of them.
And then it came from there.
I mean, I maintain the death toll would be lower than you think it would be.
Yeah.
But
well, actually, you know what? That I changed my mind then, because even with everything we just talked about right there, I would have to imagine that in that sense, maybe humanity does kick on and we do start taking care of each other again. Maybe that.
Because also one thing to consider is that if these people really would die, then it shows that our culture doesn't actually care about the poor as much as we think we do.
Right.
And that the welfare state just reflects the whims of a really violent minority, or just, I don't know, some very strange hypocrisy from the rest.
So then I guess what I want to say now is I wish that the system was set up in a way where people had more to give, because it's already obvious that we are a giving, caring people. So,
but the taking people can also vote.
Yeah. Yes. People
can vote to get more, and they can breed to get more.
That's the psychological warfare part of it.
See, no, that's one of those mechanisms built into the state.
I know.
It's one of those things where you can say, oh, no, I want a small welfare system as a safety net. But that's not ever how that works. Ever.
Well, what did John Adams say, that this Constitution is only meant
a democracy as long as you can keep it?
No, that was Ben Franklin. John Adams, I think he said this was a Constitution that was meant for a religious and a moral people. So, I guess
John Adams was the one who signed the Alien and Sedition Acts that made it a felony to say nice things about the French.
Yeah, yeah.
He was one of those people that was violating the Constitution. As soon as it was written, like these mechanisms are built in. Even if we lived in a world without leftism, these mechanisms would exist, and we know they exist because we have seen them firsthand for thousands of years.
Hey, dude. Okay. What do you think about my Star Spangled boxers, Star Spangled everything, lovey dovey American history feeling? That I have does that turn you off? Because
I'm not anti-American. I'm anti-state.
All right, cool. Because
I love all that stuff.
I love the history. I love the flag. I get really, really gushy when it comes around to national holidays and national milestones and the stories and all that shit. But you know what it is? I like that. It gives me a team to root for. It's like my favorite show. You know, it's like my favorite show. You got all your characters, like Captain America. You have the biker mice from Mars. You just have your show. I'm in it to win it. But aside from that, I know I know how human nature is and where all of our flaws, both governmentally and everything else, are too. But I just like being patriotic and nationalist sometimes. I don't know why. Why do you think that is?
I mean, being nationalist is fun. And to some extent, there is some utility in being a nationalist.
I have so much fun.
Social fabric is a nice thing, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Well, dude, thank you so much for spending some time with me on the air. I think it was a good one. Oh, I'm going to go ahead.
Time to end the call, or I just want to wrap that up a little bit?
Oh, please, go ahead.
All right. So, yeah, so the point of me calling was really like just to focus on why we argue so vehemently against minarchists. And also, as a minor closing point, is that a lot of minarchists will very often make fun of anarchists and they'll ally with known fascists. So that doesn't really endear us much to them. Not to mention when a lot of minarchists are very pro Hiroshima bombing. They're very against liberty when it's not a freedom they expect to use, which is, you know, a hell of a charge to throw as a closing argument. But there are a lot of actual disagreements. They will be very mean and they hurt our feelings. But there are actual disagreements, and it's clear that they won't actually help us. Because anarchists, I mean, anarcho-capitalists anyway, are right-wing people. In the real world, like, our voting patterns, for those of us that vote, are in line with most minarchists. You don't see any anarcho-capitalists being like, actually, I'm feeling the burn right now.
Right.
So in the real world, we are working together. Like, this idea that, you know, we don't do anything for them, that we're just fostering divisiveness, no. If we ever convince them or convince anybody to hate them, that, like, they'll still be on our side in the practical sense, but we would just really, really rather that you did not become an apologist for, you know, people like veterans that assault people for defacing flags. That we would really rather that you were not an apologist for incinerating, for like dropping an atomic bomb on top of a hospital. Like, it would make us really happy if minarchists did not routinely defend that sort of thing. And that's not a minor disagreement. Like, that is the core of our morality, that us tacking into some people is wrong. And so we can agree that, yes, the thing you do is better. The level at which you assault the innocent is less than other people, but it's still offensive to us. And in some ways, it's actually more offensive because you demonstrate that in all other ways, you are capable of being a moral person. But you demonstrate this myopia, this very short-sightedness when it's people that aren't you, and we hate it.
Yeah, but you know, but like you said, there are some that aren't like that. Like, now, if I saw, if it comes down to somebody burning a symbol that has meant a lot to them, and they've put in years and they've seen people die, and maybe they are, especially if they're one of those virtuous type of soldiers, never done anything bad, never had a war crime on their effort, just, you know, very just, you know.
If you attack somebody for hurting your feelings, you're not a virtuous person.
But once again, that doesn't make them part of, that doesn't make the whole like that, because here I am, you know, I'm not
people are not like that, and you'll notice you are not one of those minarchists that ends up having to constantly debate anarchists. I mean, you end up with anarchists calling into your show and monopolizing half of the time with their call, but...
I wanted to hear what you had to say about this, so I wanted to give you a little bit more open space. But I know what you mean, man, and I really do appreciate the time on, because I want to get both. Maybe I'll release this highlight attached to the other highlight as like one big long video. That'd be great. Or like part two.
Okay. Sure, go for it.
Hey, man, thanks for the call, dude. I have to actually close the show out anyhow.
What time is it now? How far did I go off?
7:57. It was a 27-minute call.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, well, sorry. Half hour.
Thanks for having me on.
Half hours go along for a long time, and sometimes they're just a couple of minutes long. That's all. All right, dude, have a great night.
You too. Have a good night.
Okay. So you know what's going to happen now? What's going to happen now is we're going to get off the air in just a little bit, about 30 seconds. And then going live back on ZenLive.tv is Quarter Life Crisis. And then at 9 o'clock, we're not going to be doing Zorals in New York tonight. It's we got an early morning tomorrow, so we're just going to call it a night. But the other thing is this. I'm not going to be live on tomorrow night, obviously. Monday night I might be on, because I don't know if we really have any plans on Monday. It's Columbus Day. I might just come in and do the show. Either way, while we're at the house, we're in the cabin, in the woods, in the Adirondacks over the weekend, I'm going to be periscoping a little bit when we're doing fun shit, because it looks like it's just going to be a boys' trip night. Boys' trip now, so it's going to be pretty sick. It's going to be pretty hot and sweaty. There's going to be ropes being thrown all over the place. And one last thing. I got to put the thank yous in the beginning of this one, and I'm bringing all the mobile podcasting stuff. So any kind of thoughts that come to mind, we're going to be recording them up there and be uploading it to the SoundCloud and the iTunes. But thank you so much for night number two on YouTube. Imagine when we have a full week, one a night for an hour. I'm telling you, we're going to have a lot of new friends soon. And, of course, we'll keep up the Periscope, too. You guys kick ass. Let me see who's in the chat room. All I can see is Nikki, Matt, and Johnny Kimball, and Jenny Lee, Stacy, YouTube,
Gadget Doc, iLock.
Hey, and thank you for coming by again.
Oh, no problem.
It's great to have you. Anytime you're in New York, come by, say hello, please.
Oh, absolutely.
We gave her some M&Ms. She's very happy. She's content. And we're going to go up to the roof now and check out the night sky. Everybody have a great night and enjoy your weekend. We will be keeping in touch with all of our thoughts. I have to leave this running for 30 seconds so it doesn't cut us off. Good night, guys.